This is the launch pad right before the launch. You see the water turning on where before the engine start. The engine starts 6 seconds before the solid rocket boosters, as I said. You see the whole cockpit swaying. It sways 3 feet because of the cantilevering effect. And then the solid rocket boosters are lit, and you're along for the ride. Right here, the orbiter will roll into the correct inclination. So if we're going into a high inclination orbit, it'll try to find that attitude. All the thrust vectoring occurs on the solid rocket boosters and the main engines. However, about 80% of the thrust comes from the solid rocket boosters at this time. By the time the orbiter reaches the top of that gantry, it's going about 100 knots straight up. So it's a very, very quick ride. You can see the shock waves here coming off of the top of the solid rocket boosters. And even at night, the boosters are so bright that it lights up the entire cockpit, just from reflections within the atmosphere. After 2 minutes, the solid rocket boosters fall off into the ocean. As I said, there they are. And they have little retro rockets right here. And it's always fun not to tell the new guys that they are blowing off right into the cockpit. I get a little bit of a scare from that. And then once we're in orbit, you can look out the back. And this is the on-orbit operation. There's Susan Helms, who worked the arm, and Mark Lee, who was also the other EVA partner that I had. This is another experiment that we were running to evaluate how the RCS jets interacted with the space station. There's a combustion experiment that you can see. It's kind of easy to get around in orbit if you have to get a switch that's kind of like right back in there. Just turn upside down and get to it. That's a combustion experiment. A little bit of exercises. This is Jerry Leninger. He is going to fly in the Mir space station pretty soon. Susan's talking on the ham radio. We talked to a lot of people in Australia, as a matter of fact, on the ham radio. And a solar observatory satellite, which we deployed, left in space for 3 days and then came back to get it. So you can see the arm deploys it, and then it turns on. We leave it so it can point very accurately at the solar wind, and we'll come back and get it, and it's being captured right there. Now, here's food time. This is the most important. By the way, if you can't tell by now, these are our home movies. They're not really production quality. And that's why we get away with playing with our food in space and filming it. I've never actually worn an academic gown and explained that scene before. That's a trash compactor, another glamorous part of our job. Exercise is a big deal. All we can do is one-arm push-ups. So, now, this is the pilot, and he's no good on orbit anyway. All he can do is land it, so during the middle of the day, we just have him generate a little extra electricity, and if he's not behaving well, we have to beat him into submission. He's also the vice president in charge of cameras during our EVA. This is taken from the outside, looking back in towards the payload bay, and you can see that's the airlock behind that bulkhead there, and there's a Mark. He comes out first, and he will get a tether. Remember the tether that I showed you on the other pictures? They're stored out there. He'll hook himself to it, and then he'll come out. I'll follow right behind him right there, and then we'll start the EVA by setting up the payload bay. Now, right over here, you'll see this little structure here is a refueling station. And we went through the entire training process not realizing that was mounted about 30 centimeters below where it should have been mounted. And when we first, and you can see, as a matter of fact, this is me in the refueling station. And when I first put my feet into there and realized I was sitting lower than I was, I went, what else is wrong? Luckily, nothing else was, but that was one of the deviations of the flight test. Now, like I said before, we had to calibrate the fuel system so that the entire EVA wouldn't be spoiled by the bad numbers that we might have gotten from the simulator. So we flew a very precise, very well-rehearsed maneuver at the very beginning of the EVA and then compared that to the numbers that we got during the simulations. And it turns out that the flight test was much more efficient than the simulations, and we had no problems really with the fuel. And here's another test. We did each axis independently. We got bolder and bolder as time went. We call that the build-up technique, by the way. So we start off easy, and as we get more and more confidence that the machine is going to work correctly and that the pilots are flying correctly, then we get bolder and bolder. So this arm now is moving back, and we started off moving back just 5 feet and stopping. As we increase the axis rotation and we increase the axis that we tested, we move the arm back further and made the safer pilot fly back further. We're getting ready to come back, and we're trying to get all cleaned up. This is Blaine. We call him Blaino for short, liquid Blaino sometimes because he cleaned up so much. Closing the payload bay doors, the radiators. Again, radiators must be closed prior to entry. If they don't close, then we do another EVA to go out and close them manually. And if the latches fail, we have a couple of handheld mechanical latches like big C-clamps. This is the entry. Notice everybody dressed up in their launch and entry suit, and the windows are very bright because the air is being ionized and glowing red. This is a picture from the ground. The jet control, the reaction control jets are used throughout the entry until we get to Mach 1. And at Mach 1, then they're completely blended out, and the ailerons and flight control surfaces come into complete and 100% effectiveness. There's a flight test parameter that we're doing here. You can see Dick rocking the ship to get a stability derivative at a certain airspeed and altitude. A little bit of water vapor coming off of the end of the wingtips. The orbiter is flying down at a glide slope of about 20 degrees, compared that to an airliner of 2 degrees, and it's flying at 300 knots. So it's coming down and flying a lot like a brick until about that point. That point is about 1,800 feet above the ground and 600 meters or so. And then you pull it up, pull the nose up, put the gear down about 300 feet above the ground, 100 meters, and then start to bleed off the airspeed from 300 to 200 knots. And hopefully the main wheels touch down about 200 knots. You can see them right there. Again, this is in the Mojave Desert. And the nose gear comes on. You hold the nose gear off until about 167 knots. The drag chute is put out at about 180 knots, as you can see there. It's held and reefed for a while and then fully unfurled. And then the orbiter rolls to a stop.